Believe it or not, there are actually people who do not listen to The Ron Van Dam Show. And that means we can say all the terrible things about them we want, because it's not like they're gonna hear it. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
I'm not sure about that.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Thank you very much. I don't know what I'm thanking you for, you didn't do anything. Thanks for nothing, I guess. Yeah, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm the one in the middle. I'll be with you for a short period of time. I think you can put up with this. I don't ask a lot of you. Listening to this show is like getting your oil changed. It's something you have to do, but it's still a pain in the ass. There you go. How can I get your attention, my God? What can I do? I'll hold up a little puppy dog. If you can't find a little puppy dog to get people's attention, hold up a little kitten.
Aww.
I know. If you can't find a little kitten, then hold up a tiny little baby. Yeah, I know. I agree with you. I know. Don't do it. Have you ever noticed? I know you have, but it's not politically correct to do this. But when someone shows you their newborn baby or their little baby, and they say, "Isn't that the cutest baby you've ever seen?" And your response really is, "No, not really. It's not cute. It's something, but cute? No. I've seen a lot of babies. No, that's not that cute. It's a little ball of flesh that came out of you, and now clean it up, will you?" I like babies when they're like 30 years old. Yeah, man. Huh? You too? Okay. Anyway, welcome to the program. Puppy dog?
Aww.
Baby? There you go. Get it out of here. Wait till it grows up, then we'll deal with it. Get it out of here. I have an interesting program for you today. I think you'll enjoy it. If you have any type of intellectual mind, you'll enjoy this. Darius is going to join us a little bit later in the program for an extended interview. He's written a new book. It's fascinating. For once in your life, listen to something that is a little introspective, will you? All right, good, fine. Before we start, I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story. It happened to me yesterday. I go to the supermarket very frequently because I love to cook. And when I wake up in the morning, I get ideas as to what I want to cook for dinner. And that excites me because I have no life. So I go to the supermarket frequently to pick out the ingredients. Of course, I always wear a mask. Don't judge. I always wear a mask. And you should too. Hey, have you heard? If you watch TV and the news, our democracy is falling apart. Have you heard that? Big news item. Our democracy has been falling apart somewhat for 200 years now, plus maybe 250. It's falling apart. And so I chose, in the depths of this horrible crisis, to do a daily comedy show. Oh, isn't that... What a choice I've made. Anyway, I know what you're saying. Don't bother. I know what you're saying. All right, here's this little funny story.
And now it's time for one of Ron's funny stories. You could practically hear the quotes around funny, couldn't you?
I do enjoy going to the supermarket. It is a microcosm of life. It really is. It's where a group of people gather to get their supplies. It's the modern-day version of hunting for survival. It really is. And there's nothing more direct in hunting for survival than running out of toilet paper and then going to the supermarket and finding there's no toilet paper on the shelves. That causes great panic and distress. Anyway, so I was in the supermarket and I grabbed my cart where no matter which cart I grab, which shopping cart, the wheels are going in all different directions. The cart rattles. I judge my supermarkets by the quality of the carts. It's not the food. It's not what they have in stock. It's not what's on the shelves. It's the quality of the shopping carts. That to me is the experience in a supermarket, a nice, quiet, well-oiled and greased cart. So I'm going through the thing, the supermarket, and I gathered my supplies. You would call it food. I would call it supplies. To me, going to the supermarket is an adult Disney World. I could have said Disneyland, but Disney World is much, much larger. It is. It's just when you walk down the aisles, if you love to eat, and I think we all do, especially you fat ones out there, when you're going down the aisles and you see all this food just for the taking, it's just, you can take your arm and your hand and take the item off the shelf and put it in the cart, and it's virtually yours to consume. It's such an experience of satisfaction. Sex, yeah, it's fun sometimes. It's all right. Grabbing food off the shelf in a supermarket, orgasmic. It's orgasmic. And I've got the pants to prove it. Ron, where is this show going? This is not. Don't say that. Don't say that. I know you've expressed your joy of going to a supermarket. That's going like really too far. And now I'm talking to myself. So I put the stuff in the cart, and I've talked about this before. It's so funny. When we go to the supermarket and we're getting like 10 items or something, they're usually small little items like maybe a gallon of milk and some eggs and some saltines and panty liners, those kinds of things. We put them in that little slot there near the handle. We don't put them in the depths of the shopping cart. We put it in the convenience spot. Do you know that's where the little children sit? That's for little children. That's why they have those little slots there in that flap. It's so kids can put their legs through it. That's where children sit. But I have not in my years of existence, within the past, say, 20 years, I've never seen a child sit in a shopping cart in that top little thing, you know, with the where they put their ass in that. That's for food. That's for food. I've never seen, but that is what that is designed for a child to sit there and place the child's ass where you're putting your eggs and your zucchini. That's disgusting. That's just absolutely disgusting. So I've got the cart. I've got everything in the cart that I need, and I go to the checkout. Now here's the problem and the crux of the story. Follow me and tell me if this doesn't happen to you, or tell me if it does happen to you. That's that double negative thing that annoys me. Tell me if this happens to you is the proper phrase, but people say, tell me if this doesn't happen to you. That's not what you want to say. That's not what you mean to say. The dumbing of America. Democracy falling apart. Anyway, so I get to the checkout lane, and I find a spot where there's a lady in front of me. And it could be a guy. In this case, it was a lady. She was in her 50s or something like that. I can't tell. I don't guess her weight or how old she is. She's there. And I'm the next one in line, and I put my groceries down, with that little bar that separates my groceries from hers. God forbid my saltine box should touch her banana. Ooh, that sounded oddly erotic. Anyway, and there she is, and now it's time to check out and for her, and they say that'll be $40.70 to her, and she takes her card, and she swipes it, and for some reason, it doesn't work. Now, the cashier, the cashier, just this is like normal to her. To me, it's like, oh, great. Every time I go to a supermarket and I'm the next one in line, the person in front of me has some type of catastrophic problem in checking out. It never goes smoothly. The person in front of me is always a moron. So what does the cashier do? Flips a little switch on a pole next to the cash register, and a light blinks on the top of the pole. And now we're standing there waiting for somebody to come over to our rescue. The SOS signal has been sent out. The bat signal has been projected into the sky. And now we're just waiting for the cashier register manager to come over and clear the machine. I don't know what the hell they do. And we're waiting and the thing's flashing. And I'm like, okay, this is like a pathetic disco here. I want to get out of here. I have a life. I was very happy to be in the Disney World of food. Now this is a great inconvenience and a pain in the ass. The manager comes over and the lady has trouble swiping her card. She doesn't know how to swipe. Go to swiping school. Learn how to swipe. That should be the first thing they teach you when you go to school. Hey, kids, we're going to learn the alphabet, and we're going to learn how to read. But first, I have a little card for all of you. We're going to learn how to swipe. So finally, she swipes properly, and the card still doesn't work. So she says, it's okay, I have cash. And she goes into her pocketbook, and she takes out, it's like slow motion. It's like she's a banker, and she's all right. Let me see here. Let me get my accountant in here to get the money out of my wallet. Let's see. I'm going to do a financial transaction here. Let's see. I'm going to open up my okay. And what was that? $40.29? I have the change. Oh, as soon as a customer says I have the change, I know. Okay, that's just going to be another half hour. Because if anybody who says, okay, I have the change, they're going to go rummaging through their pocketbook or their pants pockets, or this is going to take an hour. Okay, I have the change. It's somewhere, but I know I have it, and no one's going anywhere until I search every crevice of my body. I will find that change. I know I have it. Oh, my God. 7 hours later. No, it wasn't 7 hours. It seemed like it. Finally, the lady goes. She goes away, and it did take a long time. And then I'm next in line, and the cashier says to me, "Hello," and I said, "Hello," and that was it. There was no sex involved, no flirtatious. It was just hello, hello, and we're done. No flashing lights. I know I don't have the change. I know my card works. I am a delight. I am a delight at checkout. I am. I don't fumble around like there's nobody behind me. I move my ass. Let's teach our children that. Let's teach our children how to move their ass. Don't fumble around for things. This happens to be an age thing. It does. As soon as you hit 50 years old, you slow down. You don't give a crap what's going on around you because you're not aware of what's going on around you anymore. For some reason, when you get a little bit older, your eyes just kind of close up and you, it's like a horse with blinders on. You know, they have those little things on the side of the horse, you know, so they can't see, you know, to the side. That's what people get when they're 50, just automatically. You get your AARP card, and you get your little horse blinder so you don't know what the hell's going on around you. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. And that's my story.
And that was another funny story from Ron. Wait, that was supposed to be funny? Wow.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, more program.
Give the gift that says, I love you. The gift that says, happy birthday. The gift that says, get well soon. The gift that says, you're the reason I went into the priesthood. The gift that says, congratulations on not getting indicted. The gift that says, I want to cover you in warm chocolate pudding. The gift that says, good luck in clown college. The gift that says, thanks for removing my unsightly wart. The gift that says, sorry about giving you food poisoning. The gift that says, I'll see you in hell. The gift that says, remember the good times we had in prison. The gift that says, I want to make sweet love to you on the white sand beaches of Rio while your hot cousin watches. The gift that says, thank you for the kidney. The gift that says, you deserve all the best, but this will have to do. The gift that says, thanks, Jesus. Whatever you want to say, you can say it beautifully with a timeless gift from Phyllis Gorman's House of Macaroni Art on Route 94 just past the Rotary, across from Sweaty Palmer's Adult Emporium.
A. Darius Kamali joins us now. He is an author at this point, but he's done so many things in his career and his life. Darius, you're like a metamorphosis from thing to thing, and they're all good, it's all good stuff.
Good morning. From butterfly to caterpillar, I'm going backwards.
Well, I don't know if that's true. Because you're an interesting individual. You started as a former, you're an analyst with the State Department, is that right?
Well, no, I was an analyst with an NGO, which is a non-governmental organization.
Okay.
But despite it being called a non-governmental organization, it was supported by the government.
All right. But not the State Department.
Yeah, I was green and naive at the time.
Well,
it was the visual evidence wing for some tribunals for war crimes, mm-hmm. crimes against humanity, genocide, everything mm-hmm. horrible in the world. And transitioned to children's animation somehow from there. It's been a long slide.
Well, but you've always been like an activist in the sense that what you saw before you was something that needed to be expressed.
You can definitely put it that way. You know, I'll tell you, everything that I've been involved with, although on the surface these are extremely different worlds from the world of human rights, mm-hmm. if you want to call it that, to Hollywood, whether it's on the documentary side or animation, mm-hmm. but the theme that links these books to all that experience is a recurring one, and that's one of identity, where, you know, I think it, and I mean this with the pun intended clearly, I think identity basically trumps all. That, you know, reason doesn't stand a chance if we don't address identity for good or for bad. I saw it in the human rights world, of course, where a lot of these crimes are being committed by one group against another, mm-hmm. ultimately because of who they see as the in-group and the out-group. Mm-hmm. And I see it on a much more superficial level across our culture, and certainly where I am now in Hollywood.
And it was a very good pun, by the way. I appreciated that.
that's what I do.
Our civilization has from the very beginning been group against group, identity against identity, religious identity, like as far back as one can remember, and clubs and groups. And it's just that you feel that, like, as you go on in civilization, you should progress out of some of these battlefields, but kind of like we're going back into them.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I would go even further. I would say that in terms of how long it's been with us, I would say maybe it's as deep as the genetic level.
Yeah.
You know, I half jokingly say in Mistake of Identity that maybe we're not meant for this civilization business. I mean, we need to genetically reconfigure ourselves through CRISPR technology or something like that. And that's only half joke, jokingly said.
Yeah.
But I think it goes back. It's part of evolution. It goes to even pre-human primates.
Yeah.
And even prior to that, probably every species defines itself, whether consciously or unconsciously at a genetic level, against other groups. And so it's not something that I am in any way advocating trying to take on head on. It's too strong.
Yeah.
I have it. You have it. Everyone has it, whether it's gender identity or racial or ethnic or national. But I think there's differences between these things, and we need to clear this up because we're schizophrenic as a society. I think, you know, there's a difference between something that you don't choose, for example, which is race, and a culture, which you do choose, presumably.
Yeah.
And I think one is more valid than the other. I don't think all cultures are equal. I think some cultures are better than others, so long as they're defined. And so it gets complicated. But certainly, identity is at the heart of all of these things.
Is identity what is explaining what's happened within the past 4 or 5 years that has come out of the closet? So it's like identity came out of the closet.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. 4 or 5,000 years, you could say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, look at our media. If you're talking about the United States, and this is by no means exclusive to the United States. You know, I come from a multi-ethnic, multinational background, and I can tell you all the things that are going on here have been going on in other countries forever. You know, they all have their Fox News and MSNBC, the equivalent of, you know, they all have their taboos and third rails that you can't touch, you know, sacred cows, whatever you want to call it. But certainly we have gotten to the point where I think it's certainly partly, at least because of social media, but it's been exacerbated, could say.
Yes, sir. I agree. No question about that. Differences are wonderful. It's just when they start chanting death to something that they are not in favor of, that's what gives me a little bit of a skin crawl.
Yeah, and it should. Here's what I would say to that is we need to distinguish between, one, the person and the idea, right? And that when you put it that way, everyone sort of agrees it's almost a truism, but we don't really act on it. We're schizophrenic that way. So, you know, the idea of, you know, love your enemy even though you don't like what he's doing. I'm not a hippie who, you know, says, hey, let's all get along. I think ideas are different. Religions are different. Ideologies, some are better than others. Cultures are different from each other, and they're not all equal, as long as you define what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Where I have a problem, again, is unchosen characteristics, such as where you happen to be born or your gender, so on and so forth. And these things have become conflated, right?
Yeah, yes.
So when you say I'm a Republican or a Democrat, it often has a lot to do with where you were born. Or if you say I'm a Christian or a Muslim, you may not have read the Bible or the Quran. Mm-hmm. You're just saying that because that's where you were born, and that's what people around you are saying. And when those two things get conflated, then we're in serious trouble because now it's my team against yours, right?
Yes.
And you can't see it rationally anymore.
It's a bad football game.
It's a football game, yeah, and I wish it was a football game, at least, you know, in football, despite the fact that, you know, I use the analogy for sports in Mistake of Identity, saying, you know, if you're I'll use basketball in this instance, if you're an L.A. Laker, you know that as much as you love the purple and gold, tomorrow you may be traded. So people don't confuse their identity as a member of a team with their more fundamental identity, but when it comes to race or gender or nationality, which are also unchosen characteristics, we do confuse those things, and that's sort of the beginning of the end.
It is. I mean, it reminds me of a basketball game where you have one team member knocking down the opposition onto the floor, you know, so that they can't shoot the ball. But then when the person falls down on the other team, The hand being stretched out is not from a team member. It's from the person from the other team helping them up.
That's right. Sportsmanship.
Yeah. So difference is totally incredible, intense, sometimes violent competition, but the hand goes out because it's a game.
And I think that might be a partial solution to this. We already have it in sports.
Yes.
If we can channel this, again, I say from the beginning, I am as groupist, and I use the term in the book groupist to kind of cover all these different isms, right, as anyone else. But if we can channel it and learn to have that twinkle in the eye, that you know that I know that you know that ultimately this is sort of a game, right?
Yes. Well, it kind of is. Let's talk about what you're doing here. You went into documentaries and hobnobbed and with getting to know some celebrities and actors and such, and then you went into writing. How did that happen?
Well, you know, I transitioned from human rights into documentaries, and that was originally a fairly smooth transition because it was documentaries having to do with human rights. Right. But I found that as my role grew, the nature of the documentaries became more and more commercial, right?
Yes.
So it went from the history of the CIA to cheesy shows like Secret Passages on History Channel, so on and so forth. And we ended up in animation, where we made a couple of animated features called Igor, Hero of Color City with John Cusack, Jay Leno, so on and so forth. Very proud of all that. But of course, even in this world, which I thought was the furthest thing you could possibly get from the world I had come from, identity is still king, whether it's the sort of stories that are being told or the battles right now over representation of the different races and ethnicities. It's really gotten out of hand. And I think people just haven't thought deeply enough about these things. And we're going in circles, playing musical chairs, thinking that progress is being made. But is it really? And that's what that's what these books are about. It's my pandemic-inspired musings on where are we going with all of this, folks.
Yeah. Interesting. You also did a collection of dark poems in Dog Whistling Dixie Past the Graveyard.
Yes, that's right. I'm glad you noticed that. There are two books that have come out during the pandemic era. The first one, I would say, is more, the subtitle is actually Poetic Meditations, and that's Dog Whistling Dixie Past the Graveyard. And the second one is, I would describe it as a combination of the postmodern contemporary tweet with a 19th century tradition of aphorisms. So these are short little parables. This is light reading. It can be done probably in an hour or so.
Oh, that's
So I wouldn't call either of them poetry per se, but they are short and they're brief and they're concise. And so you would have to really define poetry broadly to they're genre breakers. How about that?
That's nice.
A hybrid genre.
That's nice. I love the titles of your books, by the way. It's not just a title. It's like, oh.
Yeah, I'm into the long titles, it seems.
Well, no.
Whistling Dixie Past the Graveyard and then Mistake of Identity also has a subtitle, which is Midnight Musings and Twisted Tweets on Postmodern Identity. So,
yes, that is a long
one. I like the titles.
That's actually the whole first chapter.
Exactly.
No, but I mean, the basis of the title, Mistake of Identity, it's just... that's perfect. I like that very, very much.
Yeah, I thought it was a good play on, you know, mistaken identity, but it's mistake of.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just came together. They say writers have a muse, and so that's, I think, what happened here.
Yeah. Well, what's next on the agenda for you?
Well, I have several others. I think I'm going to continue the book publishing business. I have several others coming out. Over the course of the next 12 to 18 months. So maybe we'll have to do this again.
Maybe we will.
I've gotten to the stage, I'll leave it with this.
Yeah.
I've gotten to the stage in my life where I really need to make sure that I get my ideas out. And I found that with writing, especially independent writing, you don't have to raise a ton of money. You don't have to persuade a distributor. You don't have to have investors. It's you and a keyboard. And so I really enjoy the independence of being able to say what I want to say without fear of offending others.
Mm. Well, unless you do a scathing thing about someone's family, I guess.
No, interest in that sort of person.
Oh, not like the Kardashians or anything?
No, not for me.
No, I don't think so.
There's too much of that here, yeah. You know?
Well, I think that's a polar opposite.
I live in Los Angeles. Don't get me started.
You can always move, Darius. You know, I don't know. Okay. once again, the books, well, the simple titles are Mistake of Identity, Dog Whistling Dixie, Past the Graveyard, but you'll find them probably all on a website, which you're going to tell me about.
Sure. Well, there's two ways. Actually, my personal website is simply my name, mm-hmm. which is DariusKamali.com, K-A-M-A-L-I. Mm-hmm. And both of the books, Dog Whistling Dixie, Past the Graveyard, and Mistake of Identity, can be found on Amazon.
Excellent.
I think we're all too familiar with Amazon these days.
I believe so. I believe Amazon is my father. Talk about identity.
Well, you must be a very, very wealthy son.
No, I just mean as a general broad thing. If they're going to be involved and own everything, might as well be me. I don't know. Okay, Darius, perfect. Pleasure speaking to you, and people should Google you and get involved, because it's an intelligent way of noticing what's really going on in our society, and it's a smart way to do it.
It was a pleasure speaking with you. We'll have to do it again.
We will. Thank you so much. Well, that'll do it for me today. Thank you, Darius, and thank you, all of you, for listening. I'll be back again tomorrow. Seriously? Yeah. Tomorrow with a brand new show, but until then, well, I wish you peace.